Welcome to the Microsoft session on the built-in ease of access in Windows Vista. My name is Anushka Perkins, and I'm here with my colleague Oliver Solt. And we are going to show you today a preview of what's in Windows Vista. And Windows Vista is not out yet. It's the next release of Windows, the upgrade to Windows XP. It will be coming out around the beginning of 2007. And, the lights. Is that better for people? Mm-hmm. Who are seeing the screen, to have the lights dimmed in front?
Yes.
Okay, great. Definitely we want this to be an interactive session, so feel free to ask questions, and we'll have dedicated time for Q&A at the end of my portion and then also at the end of Oliver's portion. And I'm a product planner on the Accessible Technology Group in Windows. I do a lot of customer research, usability studies, trying to get in the minds of all of you guys who either use our technology directly or work with people who do. We've been working on Windows Vista for a number of years, and we're really excited to be at this portion of the project where we're very close to the finish line and ready to show some previews. Now, this is test code, so if it crashes on me, no booing and hissing, but it could be. It's just part of showing preview code, and we're willing to take that risk so that we can get your reactions to it early on before it's actually released. I did demo this at ATIA, and it did crash on me several times during that presentation, so we'll see how it behaves for me today. And it's getting more and more stable as we go along. This is a different version than I showed at ATIA, so it should be behaving fairly well. So, with Windows Vista, we wanted to solve a lot of the usability problems that we had with Windows XP. We did some studies on Windows XP and found there were three main problems. One was that people weren't aware that these settings even existed in Windows. They had no idea they could change into high contrast mode, for example. The second problem was that once we gave them a tip that these are in there, where would you think to find them? They really didn't have an idea where to find them. A lot of the settings are located in our control panel, but people weren't very comfortable going into the control panel and didn't naturally think of going to that place. So that was our second problem. Our third problem that we had was that even once they learned where that feature was, they had a hard time remembering it the next time that they went into Windows. So. I'm not sure. Maybe this room is haunted. I don't know. But
I thought it was this
one. It's not Windows this time. It's not that far. So with our general accessibility approach, those were the issues that we wanted to solve to make it more discoverable for our users and also to make it more applicable to people. We did a research study with Forrester Research and found that 57% of computer users have a mild or severe impairment, and they would benefit from using our settings. And yet, usage was much lower than that. So getting the more mainstream in our features, making it more appealing and applicable to people, that was one of our primary goals for Windows Vista. So what we've done is create one central place that you can go to in the operating system and find all of the accessibility features, whether it's a built-in accessibility setting like high contrast, or it's a third-party assistive technology aid that's been installed on your computer. You no longer have to find some things off of the start menu, several folders down, some things in the control panel. Everything is in the control panel. So I'll show you what that looks like now. This is actually Vista up here, of course, with there's some new graphics, and someone earlier was mentioning AeroGlass, which is the new visual effects harnessing the power of the hardware. That's, as hardware has improved, we're also improving the visual quality. And so you'll see some transparency of windows as I go through things. And we also have a lot of features for managing your photos, your music, for searching, for files, and a lot of security enhancements to Windows Vista. So, like I said, the one place you can go to find all of the accessibility settings is in the control panel, and that's off of the start menu. If you're a mouse user, what you would do is go to control panel, and at the high level area here, you'll notice there's There's things like system and maintenance, security, mobile PC, and there's ease of access. That's the term for all of the accessibility features in Windows. And there's a new icon now. Instead of using the universal access symbol, the wheelchair icon, we have flowing arrows and a circular design. And in usability studies that we've done, we found that this has been more appealing to a wider group of people. I did a usability study with a group of older people, and we had the wheelchair icon, and I asked, well, what do you think this section is for? And she said, well, maybe it's for if you're in a wheelchair, it teaches you how to raise and lower your desk so that you can get to your computer. And, you know, I had never thought of that before, but, you know, I could see how she would make those connections. So that just shows you how people were thinking of it in a one set way. They had a lot of preconceived notions. So this is the icon and the name, and even during setup or when you're logging on, you'll see our icon, and that means that the accessibility features are available there. So I'm going to click into Ease of Access, and there's two main portions, the Ease of Access Center and Speech Recognition, which Oliver will go into. And with Ease of Access Center, if you're a keyboard user, instead of navigating this way with the mouse, you can always do Windows key plus U, the U key. And that will always open up the Ease of Access Center wherever you are. So I'm going to click into the Ease of Access Center, and it's self-voicing and it's self-scanning. So I'm going to let it speak to you and as I go into this page.
More navigation links. Two other Ease of Access settings are available after the tool session. To see a few links read aloud, turn on narrator during scanning. Turn on magnifier. Turn on narrator. Turn on screen keyboard.
Okay, so what you heard was it speaking and scanning through the top six items that are on this page. And this allows somebody who needs scanning, if you're using an alternative input device, you can just press whatever, like I press space, and so if you have a switch and that's being tied to your space bar, then you can hit the space, your switch. And if you are a screen reader user, then it's speaking out loud to you, or if you have low vision, the voice is going to help you to navigate and get to magnifier and turn that on, or high contrast. And these are the same six settings that you would see on the log-on screen or during setup, too. So these are kind of our base-level assistive technologies that you would need. In this case, I turn on... Yes, there was a question. Go ahead.
Does this mean that setup will now be accessible from installation?
The question is, does this mean that setup is now accessible? And yes, there are certain scenarios of setup that are 100% accessible. So if you're doing an upgrade scenario, upgrade from Windows XP, you can use what's called an unattended install. You set up all the configuration of how you want your setup to run while you're still in Windows XP, so you're still using your Windows XP assistive technology aid, and then you just kick off setup and it's hands-free, and that will run and set up Windows Vista. And also, if you're doing a clean install, as you go through the first page that has any words on it, has our Ease of Access button. So you can click on that or do Windows Key plus U and then turn on, say, Narrator. So yes, we have made improvements to that. And we'll have more details. One thing I want to mention is that we'll have more details about all of our features up on our website when we actually launch. And also, in the box, we'll have pretty detailed help on accessibility features. So you'll have lots of information that you can find in the box and on the website. Okay, so this is on-screen keyboard. Yeah, there's another question. Go ahead.
Yes, the first thing that we noticed when you turned on the narration of the voices, can you tell us a little bit about that? The change in voices, the different voices than you used to have?
Okay, could the magical person who's doing the lights bring the lights down in front, please?
Yeah,
okay. Or, Oliver, would you? Now they don't want to play with the lights.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you for asking for that. Yeah, we'll get that. Okay, so the question was, tell us more about the voice that we're hearing. And her name is Microsoft Anna. And, well, Microsoft Sam was the Windows XP voice. And with Narrator, you can now use any SAPI-compliant text-to-speech engine with Narrator. So if you prefer a different voice that is run by a different text-to-speech engine, or maybe you want an international text-to-speech engine, then you can get Narrator to run and speak in different languages with different voices. Yes?
So, Vista will only come with one shift voice?
The question is, will Vista come with just one voice? And the answer is that there is going to be a Chinese voice and an English voice in the box. Okay. All right. So while I have on-screen keyboard up, I'll just touch on that. It's very similar to the XP version, where it does scanning. You can click to select the letters or hover to select the letters. The most common question that I get about on-screen keyboard, thank you, Oliver, is can you resize it? And the way to resize it is to change your resolution of your home monitor. So that's what I've done. In this case, I'm running a pretty low resolution, and then that makes on-screen keyboard bigger. I know that I see some heads shaking, and I know it's not the ideal situation, but and it's still, I've noted that the discomfort about that. So, but that's the situation that we have for Windows XP, and all the other functionality of on-screen keyboard is still intact. Okay, so I'm going to close that, and then talk about the other sections that we have on this home page of the Ease of Access Center. Underneath that quick access section is a link here, not sure where to start, answer questions that Windows can use to recommend settings. And that's a link to our questionnaire. I'll go into that in a minute. I wanted just to say the third section on this page is a link to different category pages that are split up by disability type. So there's seven here for blindness, low vision, alternative input, mouse, keyboard, sounds, and reasoning. And I'll walk through those as well. So this questionnaire set link here, if you click on here, you'll see that there are checkboxes here that you can select. And this first page all has to do with vision. The point of the questionnaire is to introduce people to what settings are available on the computer that might help them. And it's split into five sections, eyesight, hearing, cognitive, speech, and dexterity. And we're using a mix of statements like that are task-based. For example, on TV, faces or text are often hard to see clearly. We also have a statement here, I have a vision impairment. And so using this mix of self-identification questions plus task-based questions, we're hoping to cast a really wide net, and if this applies, somebody might easily answer one type of question and not another type of question. And we use this with the Forrester methodology, and that proved to be very effective, and so we're implementing that in the box as well. So the first statement, or the first area here is the vision, the one that I mentioned on faces. The task-based one about on TV, faces or text are often hard to see. The second one is where I use the computer, the display is hard to see. The third statement is I am blind. The fourth statement is I have another vision impairment. So I have the first statement, the task-based one, selected. And you click next. And the second one is on dexterity. And an example of this is pen and pencils are difficult to use. And I'm just going to leave these blank. The third one is on hearing, and one of the statements is conversation can be difficult to hear. The second one is background noise in this area makes the computer hard or impossible to hear. Third, I am hard of hearing, and fourth is I am deaf. The fourth one is on speech, and the task-based question is other people have difficulty understanding me in conversation, but not from an accent. And the second statement is, I have a speech impairment. And the fifth section is on cognitive. And the first statement is, it is often difficult for me to concentrate. The second one is, I have a learning disability such as dyslexia. And third, a cognitive condition makes it difficult to organize my thoughts. So in running people through usability studies on these questionnaires, it was really fascinating to see how different people answered this questionnaire. We had an older gentleman with Parkinson's come in, and he first went through the questionnaire without selecting any of the cognitive statements. And our usability engineer, who was sitting next to him, asked, oh, I noticed you didn't select anything there. What did you think of those questions? He said, well, none of those apply to me. Well, okay, to be honest, that first one, yeah, I'm starting to have problems concentrating. And then he paused for a minute and said, okay, all three of them apply to me. And it's just interesting, you know, Parkinson's is a progressive disease and people relate to their disabilities in different ways. And so it was just reaffirming to see this in action, that he was willing to select these and felt that they were appropriate. And in case you're wondering about privacy, like, who else could see this information? It is private, it's stored, encrypted in a way that no one else would know how, or a program would know how to interpret that information. If in the future we did want to integrate this with some other offering that we have and wanted to reuse these answers, if you're ready answering these questions, if we wanted to know more about you, we would definitely ask permission before doing that. So it is safe to answer these questions on your computer. So when you select done, then it comes with a list of all the settings that are on the computer. And I had selected the low vision statement. And so it comes back with recommendations like turning on narrator, making your blinking cursor thicker so you can see it better, changing your mouse cursor, etc. And I'm going to scroll to the bottom here, and you'll see that it's also listing Freedom Scientific JAWS and GW Micro Window Eyes. So in this scenario, these are assistive technologies that were already, say they're already have been installed on your computer, and so they'll show up as a recommendation as well. And all of the third-party ATs that I'm showing today, they are ones that are currently working on Windows Vista, so they have a test version running on our test version of Windows Vista. So we're really happy to have the third-party assistive technology so actively involved with us, and we know that that's important to our customers, is to have the AT that they want at the time that Windows Vista ships. So that's the questionnaire, and now the third section on the quick access page is all of the seven category pages, and these are a collection of the settings. And whether you go through the questionnaire and say you're blind, or you go to the task page for optimized for blindness, that's going to be the exact same set of settings. So you only have to go to one place to find what you need. Let me just do a quick time check here. Okay. So I'm going to go to the use the computer without the display page. And one item on here is turn on narrator. So I'm going to turn that on, and again, you'll hear Microsoft Anna speaking. Let's try that again.
Maybe when he did the lights, he also did the sound.
Oh, my God. I'm just going to launch it a different way. Okay, so there we go. And someone asked, how did you do that? If you go to the red menu off the start menu, so you can always do the Windows key, and that brings up your start menu. Mm-hmm. And your focus is right here in a search box, and I just typed in narrator and pressed enter. Yes, question? Okay, the question is, if you don't have sight, how would you get to that point where you could turn narrator on? And when you log into your computer, if you do Windows key plus U, that's going to bring up the Ease of Access Center. And from there, you can do, it's going to say turn on narrator, and you can press the space bar or enter, and it will turn on narrator.
So it will say, though?
Yes. Yes, it's self-voicing. It's going to scan through those top six items. But that's a good question. A lot of our design challenges that we have is, well, how do we increase the time that somebody, or make them self-sufficient earlier and earlier on in the process? So while still, there's still some gaps where we can't right away get somebody up and running, with Vista, we are making some steps to move that bar a little bit earlier and earlier. And so our goal is to eventually have it to be fully self-sufficient. Yes, question?
What areas has Narrator been improved in Windows Vista over the Windows 2000 and Windows XP versions of Narrator?
So the question is, what areas has Narrator improved for Windows Vista over XP and 2000? Well, for one, the voice that we've talked about is different and being compatible with any SAPI-compliant text-to-speech engine. We've also made some improvements with the quality of information you'll get about an object that has focus. So we're using the underlying accessibility architecture to provide information about what you have focus on. So let me give you an example of that. If I go to the desktop, you'll hear narrator saying that I'm on a container with three items. So let's listen to that. Let me do that again.
Can you turn the volume up on that?
Yeah. Did that get louder? That's... Yeah, I'm cranked up as much as I can be there. So I'm happy during the break to show people individually. But what it said is that you're on a multi-select list item. And here, let me go down to the next item.
Location. System 32 feedback flash windows control.
So for example, that gave you the tooltip that showed up. And if before we didn't have support for tooltips for narrator. So there's a lot that we're doing in the underlying architecture of accessibility, and narrator's taking advantage of that. And also our third parties can take, the third party system technologies are using that same architecture. So they get the same benefits that any of the built-in assistive technology aids get. Any third party can also leverage that richer information. Question?
With Windows Magnifier, have you added anything like a full screen mode to it, or is it just...
Right. Okay, so the question is, with Magnifier, have you added full screen mode? So let me move on to Magnifier. I'm going to exit at narrator here. And go to the page that's optimized visual display. I'll turn on Magnifier. It might flicker here. I'm running into a bug. It's actually opening up another instance of my control panel, and I'm not sure why it's doing that.
It's on.
It's getting confused. So let me do my other shortcut wave. And this refresh that it's doing right now, that won't be in the final version, but as we're still making performance improvements, that's still happening. So here's the screen for Magnifier. And no, we do not have full screen mode for Magnifier, to answer your specific question. But we have increased the scale factor. Before, you could go up to 9x resolution, and now you can go up to 16x. So the image can get quite larger. You'll see the magnification pane is up on the top. And It can follow your mouse cursor. It can follow the keyboard focus. You can invert the colors, and so in your magnified pane, it will reverse the colors. And it's also leveraging the improved graphics that we have in Windows Vista. So it's a smoother image than it was in XP. Yes?
Is the philosophy with magnifier and narrator still, this is to show you what can be done, but not to be a true screen magnifier or screen reader?
The question is the philosophy still to show you what can be done, but not to be the full magnifier that someone might need? That is still our intent. I guess I wouldn't say like to show you what can be done. That's one aspect of it, to give you a preview of what a magnifier could do. So if you decide that is something that you need, then you can purchase the third party. But we do want our assistive technologies to be very usable for select scenarios, and to be usable if you go up to any public computer, you know that it's available. If you go to the library or in a school where it might be a machine that you don't normally use, or you go over to your family member's house and you want to turn on high contrast, say. So, and our vendor ecosystem is very important to Microsoft, and we really want to support the assistive technology vendors, and so it's definitely part of our approach. Yes, question, ma'am.
On the same idea, with the on-screen keyboard, it's a very simple on-screen keyboard. It doesn't have word prediction, which most people who use on-screen keyboard would want. Is that because it's just, are you planning on adding that, or is it just supposed to be very basic?
Right, the question is for on-screen keyboard, it doesn't do some of the features like word prediction, and is that our plan for on-screen keyboard? Definitely for Vista, that is still our plan, and we, if you have ideas or what would be most important to you, definitely feel free to let me know that during our break, the break that we have, and, but that is still our approach, that it can provide the basic access that you would need. So, yes, gentlemen on site?
Yeah, I just had one other question. Concerning the magnifier and narrator, will these applications work inside of Internet Explorer as well as Microsoft Office?
So the question is, will these built-in assistive technologies work with Microsoft Office and Internet Explorer? And yes, they will. We work closely with those teams to build in the support, so you can have seamless support throughout the applications. Yes, question on the side. Hold on just one second.
My question is also about what about selections not from Microsoft, like Word Process or Word Perfect or the programs, will they, like Narrator and Magnifier, the two of them, will they support the programs from not that aren't Microsoft? And see, I only use Braille. That's it. Which means that it's impossible for me to use Narrator and Magnifier. So it means I need to have a way with like JAWS or Windows Eyes.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so the question is, will other applications that run on Windows be compatible with third-party assistive technology aids? Because as somebody who uses Braille only, Narrator or Magnifier is not sufficient. Is that... Mm-hmm. So that's the question,
yes.
And yes. Okay, the answer is that the accessibility architecture that's in Windows is available for our assistive technology vendors to use, and there's also part of it that any application developer uses as well to make sure they're exposing all the information that's needed by the assistive technology vendor. So, yes, Window Eyes or JAWS or whatever your preferred screen reader say is if they have components that work with Braille displays, then when you're writing another application on Windows, those all those are compatible. And we have architectures, architects, and developers, program managers who work with all of those various components to make sure the companies are all speaking together and working together and doing. We did a preview of our architecture model with the vendors. For several years now, we've been communicating what our architecture is and taking their feedback very seriously. And we're also working with ISV companies to create the applications. Question up front.
So following up the other gentleman's question, is Narrator and Magnifier expected to be backward compatible? Like, is the architecture expected to be backward compatible to older Windows applications that currently support the existing architecture?
So the question is, will Narrator and Magnifier be backwards compatible?
Well, no. I'm sorry, I misspoke. I meant, well, is the architecture, your assistive technology hooks, is that going to be backward compatible? Have you changed anything significantly so that older software will suddenly no longer work for assistive technology, or is it all backward compatible?
Okay, so does the architecture have that changed? Is that backwards compatible? Are there a lot of changes so the vendors need to do a lot of work? And I know some of our vendors are in the room and probably love to get a chance at the mic to answer that one. But we have made significant improvements to the architecture, and the model itself has changed. And a primary reason for that is because the Windows architecture itself has changed, like the whole way that graphics are done has changed because the industry is moving forward. So they have had to make significant changes, and that's why it's really important for us to work really closely with them. And like I'll show you at the end of Oliver's portion the list of all the vendors that are currently already writing their test versions on our test version. There's 13 so far, so I think that's a testament to their hard work and our communication with them that to get them prepared. Okay, I'd like to move it over to Oliver, and we'll also have more question and answer at the end of the session, but I want to make sure that Oliver has a chance to show you speech recognition. It's really exciting, and here's Oliver.
Can you hear me? Can everybody hear me? I think that'll work. Thanks, Anushka. When we started a few years ago to explore the idea of adding a speech recognition solution into Vista, we started by having focus groups and talking to customers to figure out what it was that customers wanted from a speech recognition solution. And five key things stood out that I want you to sort of keep in mind as I'm demonstrating the solution in a few minutes. Number one, users wanted the solution to be hands-free. And hands-free included for them the second point, which meant that they needed a voice-driven way to tell the computer to start and stop listening so that they didn't constantly have to interact with the computer by mouse or keyboard in some way. Number three, users didn't want to have a differentiation between commanding and dictation modes. Now, if you're familiar with speech recognition solutions by Microsoft that we've shipped in the past, you might have seen that we had a dictation and commanding mode in the past where the user first had to sort of declare their intent before they could do something. We no longer have that differentiation because users didn't want it. The next thing that users really wanted or demanded from us was that they needed to be in control, in constant control. And that meant two things to them. That meant, number one, that the computer shouldn't just randomly do things in response to their actions that they didn't intend to have done in the first place. But it also meant that they wanted control over their keyboard and their mouse by using their voice. And the last thing that users wanted from a speech recognition solution that was part of Windows was that it needed to be easier to learn and easier to get ramped up on. Speech recognition solutions in the past have required a lot of effort on the user's part to learn commands. So I'm going to show you what we've done with this feedback and what the solution is that we came up with. First, I'm going to put on my headset microphone here. And notice that I have a mute button on my headset microphone. With this mute button, I'm going to control whether or not the microphone is actually receiving input from me. This is not required when using speech recognition, but I find it to be easier when I demonstrate the solution to use this. Now look at the user interface, the graphical user interface at the top of the screen. It currently says that it's sleeping. Start listening. and the computer switches to listening mode. I can do the same thing the other way around. Stop listening. Stop listening. Hold on, I have to play with my mute button and I have to position the microphone properly. And it took a moment there, but it went into sleeping mode. Now you can switch these modes with your keyboard and the mouse as well. You can do it by pressing the Control Windows keyboard combination on your keyboard, but you can also press the blue microphone button in the user interface at the top of the screen here. Let's talk about the user interface for a moment. Next to the blue microphone button, you have an audio meter. And as I'm actually unmuting my microphone, you can see that the audio meter moves up and down to indicate that the computer is actually continuously hearing my voice and receiving speech input from me. Next to the audio meter, you have a text feedback area. And that text feedback area will continuously give helpful hints, like in this case, try saying start listening, when you use the application. This is actually helpful in multiple ways, right? If you say something to the computer that the computer doesn't understand or doesn't know what to do with, it'll give you helpful hints as to what it wants you to do or to ask you to repeat what you just said. But it also completes or fulfills an important learning functionality that I'm going to tell you about a little bit later in the presentation. But let me actually get started doing some work using speech recognition. Start listening. Start listening. Open WordPad. The computer didn't hear what I said, so it said, "What was that?" Open WordPad. Open Notepad. Maximize that. Hello, period, new paragraph. My name is Oliver, period, new paragraph. I am here to demonstrate CAPS Windows Vista Speech Recognition, period. Speech recognition is an exciting new technology that promises to change the way we interact with computers in the future. And the computer, period, has dictated all the text that I just spoke almost without any mistake into the Notepad window. It has, however, made a couple of mistakes. Specifically, it didn't get Windows Vista speech recognition correctly. It got Windows Base 8 speech recognition. That is largely due to the fact that Vista is a proper name and the computer has never heard of it before. The important thing to keep in mind when you talk about speech recognition accuracy and dictation varies from between 90 to 99% accuracy out of the box. Now, the large variance in the accuracy has to do with the subject matter of what it is you dictate. Some subject matters the computer will do extremely well with out of the box. Others, it first has to adapt to. The important thing, though, is that when you correct your mistakes using nothing but your voice, the computer actually learns from its mistakes, and it is unlikely to repeatedly make the same mistakes. So I'm going to go ahead and correct the mistake that it has made. Correct base 8. And in response to my command to correct what it got incorrectly, it pops up a dialogue with alternates that the computer might have also heard me say during this. Vista is actually not on that list, but despite the fact that it's not on that list, I can redictate in this context here. I'm just going to say Vista again and let's see what the computer does. Vista. And Vista is actually on that list. It's the last item on the list, but it's not the way I want it to be on that list. Rather than being uppercase V-I-S-T-A, it's lowercase. But that's okay. I'm going to use the spelling function. That's also available. Spell 9. And what the computer did now is it took that option 9 from that dialogue, opened a spelling dialogue, and lets me spell in this area. And each letter is numbered so that I can quickly navigate to that letter. 1. And the computer put the focus on the letter V. And instead of just redictating caps V here, I'm going to do something else that's kind of interesting. Capital V as in Victor. And the computer got V as in Victor right, and it's right in there. I could have also said V as in volume, V as in any word beginning with the letter V. So you don't have to know the common alphabet that is used here, like A as in alpha, B as in beta, things like that. You can just say V or A or C as in any letter beginning with that respective letter. Okay? And the text is basically correct. Now, when I'm done dictating, oftentimes I find that I go back and I change my mind. There's a question, Dan?
Yes. First of all, how does he distinguish the difference between dictating and command, which apparently is a difference in one? If you want to say a period, blah, 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 and if you want to write down a period,
The question was how the computer differentiates between dictation and commanding, and if you wanted to dictate a word that is an inherent command, like period, how do you actually go about how do you go about doing that? There are ways to do that. You actually, if you want to insert something that is a command, you can just say insert followed by the name of that command, or followed by the name of that thing, like insert period, or insert literal period in this case, where you want to spell something out. Anything after the word literal will actually be spelled out. So there are ways of doing that. Let me, in the interest of time, because we don't have a lot of time, there's still a bunch of stuff that I want to show you, let me move the questions towards the end of my session, if I may. So let me move around in the document to show you, give you an idea that that is relatively easy as well. Go after here. And notice that the insertion point is moved after the word here in Los Angeles today. And the text gets inserted into the document. Select a paragraph, copy, go to the end of the document, new paragraph, paste. And it's easy for me to navigate around in my document, select text, go to the end of the text. I can go anywhere I want to in the document. I can highlight things. I can remove the selection. But what if I want to format things using the menus that are available in the application that I'm working with? Let me show you. Select all. Format. Font. Click bold. Click 36. Okay. Clear selection. And I've just used types of commands that we call say what you see and click what you see commands. So what that means is anything that you see on your screen, any control that you see on your screen, anything at all that is there, you can say the name of it and the computer clicks on it and does the associated action. In the name of it, in the case of a menu, it drops down the menu. In the case of a button, it clicks the button. In the case of a radio button, it clicks the radio button. Check boxes. Everything works. And you can use these say what you see commands any way you want to. We haven't changed anything in any application we interact with. We haven't changed Notepad. We haven't changed WordPad. We haven't changed IE. We just work in these applications. In Internet Explorer, you can say the names of links on a page. We click on these links. What, however, if the command that you give is ambiguous, for instance, in this text, I want to change the occurrence of speech recognition to be capitalized. Capitalize speech recognition. I have four instances. Hold on, 1 second. Capitalize speech recognition. So it turns out that I have four instances of the word speech recognition in this document. I say capitalize to it. The computer doesn't quite know which one I want to capitalize. So you can't see this on the screen because the numbers are relatively small because the text is huge. There are actually numbers on top of these items, and I can navigate to the specific instance by just saying the name of the number, 2, followed by OK. Now 2 is highlighted, but I'm going to choose the first option, 1, OK, and the computer just makes the change for me. I'm in complete control over what the computer does and doesn't do. Now, I've told you that you can use the say what you see and click what you see commands on any user interface part of Windows. Some user interface part that you will not know the name of, right? For instance, you have buttons on your toolbar you might not know the name of. We all know that the bold button is called bold. But what if you want to change the volume on your Microsoft Windows operating system? Most of us do this by clicking on the lower right-hand corner of the screen where you have a little loudspeaker icon, right? I honestly have no idea what that thing is called, and I don't know how to get there with the sound of my voice. Well, actually, I do, and I'm going to show you how to do that. Start. Show numbers. And notice that I have a show numbers command at my disposal that superimposes numbers on top of all of the visible controls on the screen. the numbers fade in and out so that I have an ability to still see what's underlying to those numbers so that I can pick the number that I want to interact with. In this case, the number of the volume control that I want to interact with is 40, so I'm going to pick it. 40. Okay. And the dialogue pops up. Now I'm in a dialogue that, from my perspective, is even worse, right? I have slider controls on that dialogue. I don't know. You know, I've jumped from the fire into the frying pan, the other way around. and I don't really know how to interact with that. But I can use the show numbers command, and this is the case where I want you to see in a moment what the text feedback control actually does. Show numbers. Show numbers. And notice that the microphone control actually keeps disappearing on me here. This has to do with the mute button on my microphone control. But now I have numbers on top of the slider controls, and I can actually turn the volume up by saying the number. 4. Okay. Now it says, next time, say page up in the text feedback control. So the computer is actually telling me, you know, if you don't want to use this show numbers command here in the future, just say page up to achieve the same thing. Now, I'm going to deduce from that that page down probably does the exact opposite of page up, right? Let's try. Page down. And I was right. But the only thing is that there are two controls that respond to page down. So if I want to turn it, and the computer doesn't know which volume I wanted to turn down, so it asks me, let me just finish that and I'll come to your question. 1. Okay. And the volume turns down. Your question, sir?
Can you change the rate of the flashing? So if I need to look at it longer in order to resolve what it is I'm looking at?
No, the flashing, you cannot. The question was whether you could change the rate at which it flashes. No, that is not configurable currently in this version. But the flashing does not stop until you're basically done giving your command. It fades in and out. The initial fade-in, actually, I don't know if you notice this, is just a little bit longer than subsequent fade-ins, because we do want to give you time to adjust to the numbers. In the interest of time, if I may just forego questions now, and we can do this afterwards. I'm going to get out of this and then talk a little bit about mouse control and keyboard control. Close that. Switch to notepad. So oftentimes, you know, I just showed you that I close the window here by saying close that, and I can do this with any window. I could do that with the notepad window here as well, but I also want to talk a moment about how you have control over your keyboard, because that is something that users ask us to do. Many of us are used to pressing Alt F4, the keyboard combination that shuts everything down when we want to close an application. I'm going to do the same thing here. Press Alt F4. And the computer pops up with the dialogue, do you want to save changes to untitled? And no, I don't want to, so one of the buttons says don't save. I'm just going to say don't save. And the application disappears, and I'm in complete control. Now, what about the mouse? I talked about keyboard control a little bit. I want to talk about mouse for a moment as well. Show desktop. I'm on my desktop now, and on my desktop, I oftentimes find that I have documents lying around that I want to drag and drop to the recycle bin to get rid of them. I can do that with my voice as well. Mouse grid. Mouse grid. When I say mouse grid, the computer superimposes numbers on top of the screen and actually divides the screen into different sections that I can then drill into and perform mouse-related actions on. I'm going to grab one of the documents on the left-hand side of the screen and drag it to the recycle bin. 4. 7. 5. 4. Mark. 1. 1. 1. Click. And the computer drags and drops the document into the recycle. So I've shown you some pretty cool stuff, things that you can do with speech recognition. Your question might be, you know, this is all fine and well, but this has got to be hard to learn. Well, I've shown you a couple of areas where the computer actually teaches you interactively as you go along. So the only real command that you need is show numbers if you want to interact with your screen, and the computer teaches you the rest. But we've also added an interactive speech tutorial to the solution that I want to show you before we finish here today. Show speech options. And the speech options tutorial has one option here that says start speech tutorial. But I'm lazy, so instead of saying start speech tutorial, I'm just going to say tutorial. And basically, it's going to start the tutorial.
Tutorial.
So you don't actually need to say the full name of things that you see on the screen. You can say any subset. And the interactive voice tutorial will actually guide you through two important things with respect to speech recognition. Number one, like I just said, it will teach you everything you need to know to use speech recognition. It will teach you all the commands that I've just demonstrated here, plus a few more. The duration of the tutorial is about the duration of my presentation to you here today. I want to show you one topic that I'm going to sort of skip ahead into. I just want to show you one page real quick. Next. Next. I am now using speech recognition to dictate to the computer. Period. Talking to the computer is easier than using the keyboard. Period. And that's how easy it is to walk through the tutorial. You walk from A to Z in about 25 minutes, you learn a lot about speech recognition, but the other very, very important thing here is, for those of you familiar with speech recognition, the computer doesn't just teach you what you need to know in order to use speech recognition, it also trains the speech recognition engine. What does that mean? Any computer who needs to understand your voice needs to first calibrate its internal mechanisms for interpreting your voice to your specific voice. And this is actually part of the speech recognition tutorial. In previous versions of Microsoft Speech Recognition, you have to actually walk through a little wizard that would ask you to read about 10 minutes worth of text. You still can do this in Microsoft Vista Speech Recognition if you so choose, but you don't have to. You can spend your time, that 10 minutes that you would need there in the tutorial, and actually learn something in the process. And that's the end of my presentation today. I do want to thank you all for coming here and talking. It's super exciting to do this. If you have any feedback that we can't answer here today, we have an email alias that you can send email to. It's listen@microsoft.com, listen@microsoft.com. And myself, as well as my team, will be in contact with you there and answer your questions.
We're also handing out surveys.
And we're also handing out surveys, yes. So I think it's time to take questions. Where do I start? I'm going to start on the left. Actually, there was a lady behind you that I was pointing to. I'm sorry. My bad.
I have played with Dragon, and I'm curious how long it took me to actually go through that training to get such exacting duplication of your speech onto the screen.
The question was, in a nutshell, how long did it take me to get the accuracy that I got? Not long at all, actually. I set this computer up with this version of Windows last Friday, and prepared for this demo over the weekend and used this specific image because I honestly wanted to make sure that it makes some mistakes. So I made sure that I didn't train it too much because I wanted to demonstrate to you how I can correct my mistakes. All in all, I spent maybe, including the tutorial, 25 minutes talking to the computer. That's and so this is the accuracy I got. Next question, and I skipped you, I'm sorry.
Also wondering, when you use English today, what languages, if any, are supported in the detection mode?
The question is, I use English today, what other languages, if any, are supported? I will tell you that we are working on a list of languages, about other languages to support with Windows Vista speech recognition. We're not yet ready to make the list itself public, because we're still in the early phases of actually getting it all to work. Jen, is that correct? Have we publicized the list yet? Okay, the only languages that we're willing to talk about publicly at this point are German and Japanese. I'm going to jump over to this side. Yeah.
Is this your speech recognition technology, or did you license
it? The question is if this is Microsoft speech recognition technology, or if we've licensed it from somebody else. Everything you see here was developed in-house. Everything. Start to finish, nuts, bolts, everything. Up front, the gentleman with the dog.
Yes, I have a question. I noticed, and this was very, very good, but for those people who are visually impaired and cannot see the screen but do wish to use dictation, have you integrated narrator into this so that the dictation experience is self-voicing?
The question from the gentleman up front was whether for people with vision impairments, have we integrated narrator to make the text that you dictate onto the screen self-voicing for those people with vision impairments that want to use dictation. We have made the application accessible. The speech recognition accessible, so it will play well with other assistive technologies. So there's nothing built into the speech recognition system that should stop you from doing this. And depending on how far a narrator solution wants to go, though, in order to make the experience really a great one for its users, some solutions might have to do some more work if they so choose. But out of the box, it should work rather well.